Welcome to Kin Folklore, where we have gone through a portal and returned to the world of His Dark Materials for Season 3 of the BBC HBO series based on the novels written by Philip Pullman. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andrea. In this episode, we consult our lethiometers about episodes 3 and 4 of the final season of His Dark Materials. We'll summarize the episodes, talk a bit about our observations, and discuss some of the themes, and we'll look through the Amber Spyglass for some background. Each week, HBO is releasing 2 episodes, and we'll be bringing you coverage of those episodes in this feed each Thursday. We will also be discussing some of the differences from the original trilogy of the books, but we will not be spoiling future episodes of the show.
And Kin Folklore will have adult content. Father President McPhail. Man, your name is Hugh, okay? Like, it ain't, that's what your name is. We'll enjoy none of this adult content because, you know, he's Father McPhail and his brand is tell me you need to get laid without telling me you need to get laid. Let's go.
So let's talk about episode 3 first, titled The Intention Craft. Will and Lyra rest and recover in some random world. We don't know where it is. And catch up.
Little R&R. It's R&R world.
Yeah. We have no idea what this world is. Whatever. It's fine. They catch up on what's been happening in the time they've been apart. But they aren't alone. Salmakia is following them, and she discovers that the knife is broken.
They gaslighted her crazy. They took lessons from Aang, for sure. Like, they're out here, like, for sure, like, oh, yeah, we'll do what you want and let you use the knife if you do this and that. And then they walk away, and she figures it out. Like, they don't really, like, tell her the knife is broken. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's wild.
They take the knife back to Yurik to have it fixed. After the knife is mended, Balthamos returns, because, you know, he stormed off last time talking about he don't want to get involved in human stuff, and tells them that he can't travel with them to the land of the dead, but he'll stay nearby and watch over them.
No one should be traveling to the land of the dead.
I mean, listen, Will was like, nah, let's just go to Azrael. Like, what?
Yurik, when Yurik Bjornason is shook, like, come on. Yurik Bjornason took out half the Magisterium last episode. He's like, nah, son.
Yeah, he's like, that knife shouldn't exist. Like, nah, this is not really cool. Will cuts into the land of the dead, which appears to be a vast desert. And Pan, talk about Pan is shook.
Yeah.
Pan is immediately says, I don't feel safe here. This is not okay.
Yeah.
As Azrael's prisoner, Mrs. Coulter tells him, she's just trying to make sure that Lyra is safe. Again, Azrael's like, yeah, she be all right. I don't believe none of this Eve foolishness. Like, she's fine.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know, he tells her that Salmakia is with Lyra, you know, and that she will be protected, even though he leaves out the part that Salmakia is not there for Lyra. She's there for Will.
Yeah.
Azrael brings Mrs. Coulter before his war council, which is Ruta, Lord Roke, and Ogunwe. And, you know, she promises that she'll work with them and be an asset if they can help Lyra. And because they can help Lyra, they all reluctantly agree to let her stay, but none of them really trust her. And in fact, Ruta is like, listen, if she pops off, like, I gotta be the one to kill her. Like, let's just make it clear. Yeah,
Ruta was ready, yo.
Ruta
been waiting for
right.
this moment
Ruta
for
is
a minute.
Always, Ruta is my girl because she's always ready. Remember when Serafina was talking all that? Let's see if there's another path. Ruta was like, the path is destruction of the Magisterium.
go murk them all.
I love her. And so she lies to them, though.
Yeah.
Mrs. Coulter lies to the council when they ask her about the knife. She pretends, she says, okay, yeah, I know Will, whatever. He's an arrogant little kid who thinks himself.
Insipid, she says.
Oh, yeah,
insipid.
She says insipid.
Like, I was like, yo, this is some real parental shade. Like, she's like, he thinks he's like, but he's an insipid little. Like, I was like, damn, yo, she is not feeling the dude that's feeling her daughter right now.
Yeah, and she's like, he thinks of himself as a hero. And I was like, he is a hero.
He is a hero. Exactly.
He has every right to feel that way. But she says she doesn't know anything about the knife. After receiving a report from Salmakia, Roke tells Azriel that Mrs. Coulter's a liar because not only does she know about the knife, but she broke it. And Azriel, you know, takes this information, confronts Mrs. Coulter, and then takes her to use the technology from Intercision to torture and seemingly destroy the angel that he has as prisoner.
So you lied to me. Let me show you torture.
Right.
Like,
word.
Like, that was his answer to, like, yo, you're a liar, which tracks, but let me also show you what tracks for me, which is torture.
He also seems to think that this is, like, gonna get her back on their side. Like, it's a very, I was like, y'all are, this is the most toxic relationship.
Mad toxic, yo. Oh my gosh.
When he turns around, Mrs. Coulter is gone, and she's taken one of the intention crafts with her.
Mm-hmm.
Azriel, rather than shooting her down, sends Roke after her. Father McPhail. Oh, I'm sorry. Again, I keep doing this. I keep forgetting his title.
You keep forgetting his official title.
Father President McPhail.
Man, that dude's name is huge.
We just gonna call him by his government. That's what
call
we do.
By his government. His mama named him Hugh. I'm gonna call him Hugh.
So he summons Dr. Cooper. For those of you who've forgotten who that is the doctor who was leading the intercisions at Belvanger.
And we're saying doctor in air quotes. She is out here. She's a little bit like her theories. Are mad wild. So anyway, has been. She's always. She was a little bit. She was like, even the other doctor was like, "Yo, let's stop doing what we're doing at Bovanger." And she was like, "Nah, forget do no harm. Let's go."
She really was. She was all in. She's apparently alive, and she's been summoned to Father McPhail because he wants to know how Azriel released so much energy when he murdered mm-hmm. Roger. What's the science behind that? She tells him it's heretical. He doesn't care. But she also says that when a demon is severed from its person, there's a release of energy. And he asks if she can manipulate that energy into a type of a weapon.
I mean, I could. She's a little bit shook too by McPhail, like, right now.
Well, she lucky for her, she hasn't met Father Gomez, because then she'd be really shook. But yeah.
It's true. So in episode 4, Lyra and her death, still journeying to the land of the dead, Lyra and Will come to a road with many people traveling down it. Pan still feeling uncomfortable. So this is a sign, right? Lyra is probably internally feeling uncomfortable because this is a representation again of her soul. A woman tells them to ask their deaths where they should go. Their deaths are always with them, we learn, from the moment they are born. Lyra summons her death, who appears as a young woman. After much discussion, she agrees to take them to the crossing into the land of the dead. Oof. As soon as they arrive, they're informed that Pan cannot come with them. He must stay behind. Lyra and Pan separate, and it is extremely painful for both of them.
And you for me.
And for me.
This was hard to watch.
Yeah, 100%. She is the screams that you hear that she's making, and I mean, just all the conversation before. Pan is like, you're choosing you. Roger over me. It's rough, man. It's rough. It's a rough moment.
Yeah.
Mrs. Coulter arrives at the magisterium and tells Hugh, aka Father President McPhail, that she was keeping Lyra safe from the meeting of the serpent who would tempt her, and that he ruined everything by sending Father Gomez and the troops. And she rolls in there as if she's got Valarian blood. Like she does, she rolls in like hella like turnt up, like, listen, tell Hugh that I'm here to see him.
Remember when she rolled into the magisterium last season, like, and read everybody for filth immediately? Yeah. I thought that's what we were gonna see. That's not exactly how it panned out, but she just, the woman has confidence.
Yeah, 100%. And the best part, the thing I've been waiting for her to say, that I was when they were in the cave, her wardrobe was still impeccable. Like, she was dressed to the nines. When they got captured, they made her change into the war camp garb. And so when she rolls up into the magisterium and she's like, I was with Asriel and his war camp and blah, blah, blah. I mean, look at me. Look how I'm dressed. I was like, yo, Mrs. Coulter is a G, man. I'm sorry. She's like, look what I had to wear. Like, I mean, always impeccable with the dress. It was so good. So later, Roke reveals himself to Culty and says that, hey, he's here to help. He came in the craft with her, in the intention craft. He tells her that Father Gomez is up to something. He's been following him. Mrs. Coulter and Roke hatch a plan. In the morning, she pretends to look for the chapel, but she's really looking for the room that Roke saw Father Gomez going into. And when she finds it, they find Dr. Cooper and learn that the magisterium is building a bomb.
Real in godly the of them.
How God? Yeah, you know, they're very into making sure that that they uphold the authorities' mandates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the evening, Father Gomez sneaks into the room and steals Mrs. Coulter's locket, planning to use Lyra's hair in the locket to locate her and detonate the bomb to kill her. Real slimy shit.
Yeah.
Steal the woman's locket of her child's lock of hair. It's crazy.
It's really maniacal. Like, yeah. To use her science
mm-hmm.
that she developed with Dr. Cooper and her daughter's hair to do the thing that she's been fighting against is just really, I was like, wow, these guys are terrible.
Yeah, and the fact that she's going to these lengths with the magisterium and even with Asriel and even with hiding Lyra and all those things, it starts to put, even though I haven't always loved her methods and obviously the things she did to other children, it starts to put into perspective why she showed up to Jordan College for Lyra, that she really understood that based on what they were doing, she wanted to keep Lyra safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It
mm-hmm.
starts to put... Even though it didn't always feel that way, it's kind of like, oh, she's trying to keep her safe. Mm-hmm. And she's definitely turned that way now. So Roke retrieves the hair, but not all of it, which is, oh, God. When Mrs. Coulter tries to turn the magisterium against Father McPhail, she is arrested and told that they will sever her demon to create the energy for the bomb. Mary continues in the other world. Her long travels looking for Lyra and using the I Ching to guide her, but she's running low on supplies. While sleeping, Mary comes across a strange animal that's out here busting a rollerblade. Let's go. and the animal has left her water and food and bids her to eat and drink.
I've been waiting for the reveal of these animals. They're so cute.
They're so adorable. Oh my gosh.
Really cute.
It's really amazing. So let's talk about some notable events.
Well, before we do that, how'd you feel about the episodes?
I like this episode, actually. I like both episodes. I really I love that we're starting to see what appears to be a redemption arc for Mrs. Coulter. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about that a little last season, how I was kind of like, you know, I understand what she's going through, even though I don't always love her methods. And I think that she's like starting to prove to be an ally towards Lyra, even though Lyra doesn't know that. I think she's working really hard to make sure that Lyra's safe. And I like that immediately she kind of like, you know, she kind of gets an ally also with Roke.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really, because I could understand what Roke was doing when he was zooming around, but he kind of like looks and says, okay, I know what I got to find out what's happening here. He kind of calls her out and says, you're here to blow, to burn the whole thing down, basically. Like, you're here to like stop them. And she, you know, admits that she is. And I think that I love that part of it. I love the concept of, you and I talked about this a little offline, your death being with you throughout your whole entire life. And that you can't really see it until you're ready for it, that you have to call for it, you know, in that way. It was a little, you know, obviously it was, I was very, very upset by the separation of Pan and Lyra. I understood what Lyra was trying to do, but it felt painful to watch, you know? But I liked it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I thought that both episodes were really strong in different ways. I really love what they did with Roke here. And I also just think it's, Roke stays because he sees that she is a mother who is trying to do whatever she can to save her child. He doesn't really have that much of like a strategic reason to stay, right? I mean, I guess he's kind of stuck there because without her, he can't get back to the camp, but like, he doesn't necessarily have to be such an ally, and he really is trying to help her out.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm not sure, I think probably without Roke, she would have never figured out the plan right away. So yeah, I really liked everything in these two episodes about Mrs. Coulter, but I also found the stuff about death. It is, to me, that is the most fascinating parts of the book. And I felt like they nailed it, even though they made some changes.
Yeah. And another piece of it was that I really resonated with was the knife needing to be forged again.
Yes. That scene with Will is incredible.
Yeah, it's really, really great, and it such great kind of like subtext, exposition, and foreshadowing, when really like he's being like kind of like the idea of his mom, or the thought of like him leaving his mom and all those things with his mom shattered, because he was shattered the knife. And that the thing that brings it back together is him focusing his mind and his intention on Lyra, another person who he loves, right? Mm-hmm. We're revealing, and that coming back together, because he really, you know, like Yurik tells him, I can do the work of the blacksmith, but it's going to take you as the bearer to like use your mind to like to do this. And I thought it was just a fascinating scene. Like, it was really, really great.
Yeah, so, I liked it too.
Before we get to that scene, though, we see like an argument between Will and Lyra when they first come back together. You know, what did you think of that?
Like, I loved it. I thought this was great. Because it really builds them out as characters. And like, they're not always in agreement. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen these two bicker many times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Lyra can't make an omelet. Doesn't always bathe when she's supposed to. Like, there's there's many issues that have come up, but like, this is a big issue. And Will is like, my dad asked me to do something with his dying words, and that's the priority right now. And Lyra is like, but Roger asked me to come to him right now, and that's my priority. And they don't quite reconcile it. Like, Will just, after the knife is mended and Balfamos reappears, Will just kind of agrees to go with Lyra. And I think the scene that you just mentioned is the key, that Lyra comes into focus as a person he can be there for. He can't be there for his mom. He's stuck in this other world and in the midst of this conflict. He knows he's supposed to go to Azrael. He feels like he's letting his dad down by not doing exactly what he was told to do. But he can still show up for Lyra. And so I think that's what helps him make his decision.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think on top of that, I think that he's always thought that. He never really went into this thinking, oh, I'm going to be the knife bearer. Mm-hmm. He originally went into this, you know, as well. He was, you know, hiding from the law, man on the run. But he also went into it kind of thinking that Lyra was the one who had, like, this special thing she had to do, until he became aware of his part in the mission. And I think, like, seeing her in that vision also re-solidifies that they're, you know, that he should go with her thought and her process, possibly her plan, because there's an importance that she holds. You know what I mean? Like, so I think like that to me triggered that too. Like kind of like on the other side of it, we have Azrael and Mrs. Coulter having an argument, which is an interesting argument, right? Like, you know, Azrael won't acknowledge the suffering that Mrs. Coulter endured after Lyra's birth, and what happened, you know, with the murder of her husband and all the judgment and the shame that she had to endure. And Mrs. Coulter admits that she's been a bad mother, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, I've been terrible. That's it. But she's really wanting Adriel and his allies to do more for Lyra because she does love her. And I think that you start to really see that she's been misguided. She's made mistakes. She's, you know, dealt with shame, self-loathing, all these things that we've seen, but that she loves Lyra.
Mm-hmm. And I think that she's also just more self-reflective than Azrael. Like, mm-hmm. and I think that becomes important later because mm-hmm. he's like, oh, maybe I should have done a little bit more. And she's like, no, you absolutely like should have been there for like, mm-hmm. we're bad parents. And he doesn't seem to care as much about it. Right. And it's shocking to everyone because, like, even Ruta, who I think knew this about him before she joined up, that he didn't really care, is like, Lyra is important. So why are we doing this?
Yeah, yeah, like, exactly.
She's like, I like Lyra. And also she's important to the witches. And so obviously she's an important character. Like, why aren't we acknowledging this?
Yeah, agreed. I totally, totally, totally agree that, like, it doesn't make sense that he's just, like, so out. And I think Commander Ogunwe, I think this is a, he kind of takes pause with both of them during this thing. He's like, I don't really know her to trust her, but I think he, one of the determining factors, I think, in deciding, not for Ruta, but I think for him, to cast his vote in favor of her staying was not only her scientific ability and all things she was and her insight about the magisterium and all those other things, but I think it's his recognition of her care for her daughter the way he cares for his daughter who's suffered something.
Mm-hmm.
I think that recognition of like, okay, she's genuine about that, but I don't know if I can trust her with all these other things. And then seeing Adriel kind of be so removed and kind of like whatever, he's like, how do I trust the person who's this cavalier with the life of his child? So I think there's like a real, he kind of is like, yo, the Commander Ogunwe kind of has an eye-opening moment in that moment, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so too. He's not, like, he's in it for the war because he believes in what Azrael believes in, but he's not quite sure he believes in Azrael.
Yeah.
Because agreed. Mrs. Coulter's motivations are very clear to Ogunwe. She wants to protect her child.
Mm-hmm.
Azrael, as Mrs. Coulter even calls him out, he's gonna like there's a bit of this. Is Azrael gonna put himself on some kind of throne if he wins? Are they creating another authority in Azrael? Mm-hmm. Like, and so I think there's that mistrust that is should be natural, but like I think Ogunwe and Roke definitely are like agree to let Mrs. Coulter stay. Because of her devotion to Lyra. I think it's a thing that they can understand and they trust.
I agree. I totally, totally agree. And another thing that I wish, I mean, I guess I don't wish because they need to go there. But the thing I think is if I was in the character, I would have like wanted to trust a little bit more. Is Yurik Bjornason's warning about the land of the dead, right? Like, And the mending and his reluctance to mending the knife. Like, he really doesn't believe that it should exist for a reason. And, you know, there's things that are too powerful about it. Like, going between worlds, you know, we there's things that it's connected to that it causes. But I think ultimately he's worried about their safety. You know what I mean? It feels like for them to go into a place that he knows there's no way to return from.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's shameful that Lyra and Will get most of their parenting from an armored bear, but yeah. He's, you know, he's not wrong in any of the things he's saying. Like, this is an extremely dangerous thing that they want to do. And also, you know, I think that Will is a little arrogant about the knife. Like, the knife has corrupted its previous bearers. Like, and when Yurik says the knife shouldn't exist, that's true. Like, this mm-hmm. is a thing that was supposed to be was created in order to help people and then was used in order to amass riches. And so I think Will isn't being realistic about what it means to be the bearer, you know, in the long term. And then the choices, you know, so much of this is about intention. The choices you make with the knife are really important. And Yurik is kind of like, I'm not sure you guys know what like, know what you're getting into. Should you even be using, should you be using this knife to do these things?
Mm-hmm.
I thought Yurik was great in this episode. I mean, Yurik is always great.
Yes, I agree. He's been great throughout. I love him. What about, speaking of like choosing the right path and like parenting, these kids have had to parent themselves a lot. So what do you think Lyra arrives with her speech, and what do you think of the speech about doubt? Like, you know, when she's trying to make decisions, what do you think about it?
It's a real character moment for her.
Yeah.
It's a big moment. Like, I think that you and I have always been a little frustrated with Lyra because she runs into a wall sometimes. Like, she's so determined, so brave, yeah, that she doesn't always consider, you know, what the consequences of her actions are going to be. And I think the fact that she can acknowledge, she has two really great moments. One is when she talks to Yurik about doubt, and then the other is when she talks to her death about, you know, what she wants is to be as a person. And they're related. But the doubt part, it's just her acknowledging that doubt is not a bad thing. It's a thing that helps her helps Will. She's talking about Will in this, but also helps her to consider, should they be doing a thing? And that's exactly what you want the knife bearer to be doing. Yeah. You want the knife bearer to be considering, should I do this before you do it? Now, the knife is not built for that, which is what Yurik is trying to say. Like, the fact that he broke the knife is because he didn't know that he should be doing the thing that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But Lyra turns it around and says, no, this is actually a strength. It's not a weakness.
Yeah. And she references, right? She says, she references him and when she first met him, right? And you know, he has to even say, you know, there she is again, with her name, living up to her name, Lyra Silvertongue, right? Like, she's able to like say things and bring things in a way that people can understand from their own experience, because Yurik is like forgetting almost that he was in a place of doubt and didn't think that he belonged in his kingdom, and it was all when she first met him. And she speaks out. I mean, the exact thing she says is, only bad people like her parents lack doubt because they believe themselves to be right. And I think that's a strong thing. It's like, when your conviction, which we see a lot in our own society right now, where you're so convinced that your perspective is the right perspective, you can have blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it through different lenses. You don't question yourself enough to make sure that it's the right course of action, just in general, for not only yourself, but other people. And this is like, you couldn't capture Asriel's flaw in this whole conflict better than saying that. He doesn't doubt his perspective for one second. What she's not aware of is, I think her mom is starting to doubt her own perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I think Asriel, you know, throws doubt into Mrs. Coulter's perspective because he tells her that the authority is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, talk about, like, there's a lot of discourse around this series about the notion of killing God. The knife is also called the God Killer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Asriel did kill God to Mrs. Coulter when he told her what he knows about the authority. And that has a profound impact on her. And it does start to push doubt in, you know, like, she's suddenly everything that she knows is wrong, and everything she's been fighting for is wrong. And so I think that that's why we start to see doubt creep in. And I think it's important in this episode that Lyra is the one who's calling out that doubt is what makes you a good person. And this is also where they're really solidifying Mrs. Coulter's redemption arc.
Yeah. And I think, like, you see, there's a real, I thought this was a genuine moment. I mean, the rest of it was kind of like theater for Hugh. Like, you know, when she, but I thought the genuine moment was when she said that she thought that she might have saw Adriel kill an angel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she wasn't sure. She wasn't sure what she saw.
Sure what I saw. So
yeah.
I was like, yeah, that seems right. You know, like,
yeah,
Because Asriel says, I'm sending a message, and then dude just evaporates.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, 100%. So I thought that that was real. I thought that was real, a real moment of like her questioning, you know, again, like doubting, like, okay, you know, I just saw an angel and then I saw somebody possibly kill an angel. And I know that these things exist now, but you know, she's working through. She's really only certain of one thing at this point, in my opinion, is that she will keep Lyra safe at all costs.
Yeah.
Whatever it's going to take.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah. And then let's back in the land of the dead. Let's talk about the idea of confronting your own death, and that you can only see your death when it's time, when you're ready to. The old woman says, when you're ready, they you see it, and they say it's beautiful about death. What a concept. I mean, that you know, because none of us, it ties to our world, right? None of us really know when we're going to or how we're going to no longer be in the physical form like this. And most times, we've heard this a bunch of times, you know, it's when it's your time, it's your time. Mm-hmm. So like, it's interesting to have this idea that there's already like kind of something where you like, it's a beautiful experience and you won't know it until until you're ready, you know?
Yeah. And also just like that your death is with you from the moment you exist. Mm. That there's something, you know, I think there's something there about like predetermination that I think is interesting to consider as a larger concept within this framework of the story about which, you know, is about God. Like, is that, my thing that I was curious about, was this something that the authority put in place, or is just the nature of life that when you're born, your death is with you. So your death knows you intimately when you leave. And I it was a beautiful concept. It was one of my favorite from the book, the notion of confronting your death, especially for children to confront their mortality. I mean, think about this. Lyra's demon hasn't even settled. She's not even gone through puberty at this point. Mm-hmm. And she is summoning her death because she has this conviction that she has to get to Roger. What a tremendous experience to think about a child that young considering their end. And she says multiple times in this episode, like, if I gotta die to do this thing, then so be it. But I have to do this thing. This is an important thing. I'm not even sure that Lyra knows why it's so important, but she knows she has to do it. It's a powerful, powerful message that I am still processing.
Yeah, I agree. I totally, totally agree that it's something to like really sit with, because you're like thinking about it from the standpoint of, I mean, like to do it, she leaves her, you know, she leaves her soul, spirit, however you want to put it, behind and goes into the land of the dead without it, right? Like to say, yeah, I have to like so in a way she and will die and come back to life.
Yeah.
You know? So
it's really, I mean, the separation from Pan, which I see as like a separate but equally important thing, is so first of all, this is the betrayal that the headmaster at Jordan said she would have to do.
Yeah.
I had always wondered if the betrayal was actually, you know, taking Roger to Asriel. Mm-hmm. But this is the betrayal, and it's a betrayal of self. Mm. And it's so difficult because I really had to check myself and remember that even though Pan is a part of her, Pan is also an entity in his own right who has his own feelings, and his anger and his hurt when she leaves him just kind of underlines what a big sacrifice this is. And then Lyra's scream when they get far enough away. The second watch, I like actually couldn't watch it. I just, I was like, I know how this ends. I can't put myself through this again. It is really, really awful. And Will is going through the same thing. Like the dude who, you know, takes him across says to Will, oh, no, you will also leave a piece of yourself behind.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know that. You're that piece of yourself is not on the outside, and that's why you don't see it. But he, even though his heart is breaking as well, comforts her. And yeah. I think we constantly see these two show up for each other in the moments that matter the most. And it was, while this is a painful scene to watch, the fact that Will, who's also grieving and suffering and losing a piece of himself as well, can be there for Lyra in this painful experience is something beautiful. And also, like, Will is also losing Pan.
Yeah.
Pan is also, you know, connected to Will in ways that are unusual. Demons don't usually connect to other people the way that Pan and Will are connected. And so he's going through multiple levels. And finally, Will don't want to be there.
Yeah.
Right before they get on the boat, Will's like, so we're really doing this or not? Like,
I was a little salty because I felt like she cut a deal and like was like, we both need passage, and she cut a deal and he was like just going, like whether with her own death. He didn't talk to his death.
I know.
He wasn't ready to talk to his death yet.
He was not ready to talk to his death.
Yeah.
I love this scene with they change this a bit from the book, because you can actually see other people's deaths in the book. Like they enter this space and they can, the deaths are like there just kind of, yeah. And they're like, what's up with these people? Why are
110%.
Why are they just lingering? But I like this idea that that it's such an intimate thing that like no one else can see it. Only you can see it, even when you summon it. And so I loved it. And the convert, I was not expecting Lyra's death to be like another young woman.
Yeah.
I was expecting fully that this was going to be like, you know, like the Grim Reaper. Like I was like a young woman dressed casually was not what I was expecting, but you could see real care and understanding between them. It was a great scene. It's a kind of a slow episode in some ways, but mm-hmm. this part isn't.
No, I agree.
It's worth the slowing it down to let this breathe a little bit, because you need that. This is like a really important thing that we're thinking through. And, you know, we'll talk more and more about this, what it means to be dead in this world next week. But like this was, I loved this. I love all these concepts.
No, it was great. And it was really great to see that the precursor to all of this was like, you know, you're seeing Lyra wrestle with this stuff through Pan's fear, right? Pan's fear is not just Pan's fear. It's also her suppressing her own fear, right? Like, so, and it's similar, interestingly enough, to what we see Mrs. Coulter do with her own emotions and with the golden monkey, mm-hmm. right? So it's very, very interesting to see her kind of going through those paces and Pan and her dealing with it and where we end up.
It's like so frustrating when she's so dismissive of Pan. Like even Will is like, is he okay? And she's like, he'll be all right.
Yeah.
And then to see that like Pan was actually right. He doesn't belong there. And something horrible was going to happen. And that's just Lyra suppressing a piece of herself, which is not really what we expect of her. She's not actually very good at that.
At all. And it's very interesting because by being that dismissive of her demon and her own, and in some ways her own fear and her own feelings, it's almost what she has to do to like go through with like her main motivation, which is Roger. She is, her love for Roger, as we spoke about offline, is her guiding principle. Yes, she loves Will also, but this is her best friend in all of the world, right? And she loves him, and she feels responsible, and it's like she almost had to suppress a piece of herself to go through with it.
Yeah, you know? I've been thinking so much about Roger and how he is the constant for Lyra, and the reason that she goes on this adventure to begin with. And since we talked about like what is Lyra's motivation here, because Lyra's not allowed to know the prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a part of the prophecy, that if she knows her role, she won't be able to fulfill the prophecy. Everyone's sitting here keeping her in the dark. You know, shout out to Dumbledore, who did similar stuff. But like she is only able to kind of move through this conflict, which is a much bigger conflict than her, than Will, than Roger, because of her love for her first friend, the only person she ever loved before she met Will, before she met Yurik, before she met Lee. I just find this connection between her and Roger to be really beautiful. And it's the thing that propels Lyra through the story. And I think it's interesting to think about from the point of view of a fantasy story, because a lot of times heroes in fantasies have these big lofty ideas. They see an injustice and they're going to change that injustice. But sometimes the best heroes actually are there for the relationships and the people. And what Asriel's lost sight of, the reason Asriel's not a hero, is because he's lost sight of the people. What are they fighting for? They're fighting for the people, but he can't see the people individually. He sees them all as like pawns in a larger plan. Whereas Lyra only...
Because everyone's beautiful. Everyone's beautiful.
Yeah. And everyone's special.
Yeah, everyone's special and everyone's beautiful.
And Lyra only sees the individuals. She doesn't see this like larger fight. And I think it's what makes her and like Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games really compelling heroes, because they're not there for the larger fight. Like Katniss is straight up like, actually, I don't want to be the Mockingjay. Like, I just want to be a person. And her love for Peeta, her love for her sister Prim, that's what propels her through all three novels.
And that's why she volunteers as tribute, and we've been doing it ever since.
Exactly.
Pop culture, I volunteer as tribute. Let's go.
Exactly. And showing up for other people is so much what is important about this story.
Yeah.
And Lyra has to sacrifice Pan and her connection to Pan in order to show up for Roger. And I just, it's rough. It's like lots of people who read this book as kids said this was the most devastating part for them. And y'all buckle up. There's going to be a lot of deaths in this season. But this part, the separation from her soul, from who she is, from who we understand to be the thing that she loves the most and understands her the best, is the most devastating part. And so there's so much to unpack in this episode, like about her, about Roger, about her, about Pan. It's a lot.
It is. Yeah, we're going to be doing it for the duration, because it keeps, these themes keep resurfacing. You know what I mean? Like it's wild. And they become, you know, there's a lot of people who have connections, but none more bonding than, I guess, Colty and McPhail for snuffing out Cardinal Sturrock. I mean, it seems like it was a bonding experience.
Our,
you know,
lives are entwined. I was like, wait, entangled or entwined?
Entwined. Is this an entanglement? An entanglement? An entanglement. Sorry. Tells him he has her body, mind, and soul because he's practiced such restraint and discipline. And thanks the authority, even though she knows the authority to be a lie. Yo, Mrs. Coulter is laid it on thick. Colty is like in full peak Colty, like in this moment. It's great.
This is, she came to slay. I mean, even with her Father Gomez stuff, she's just like, I hope we can move beyond when I try to murder you.
Yeah. No, the best is, it's me, Hugh. Or do you only answer to Father President now?
Oh my God. She's so funny. She is just extraordinarily arrogant, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
She's, and it's all an act, right? We know that Mrs. Coulter has deep feelings of self-hatred and lacks confidence in so many ways, but she can put it on because she's so used to navigating these spaces where people won't take what she says at face value. You know, like, she's, even Asriel, right, who I don't think is like inherently sexist, even says to her, like, what was so upsetting about the fact that we had a child together, is like not giving her credit for her technology.
Yeah. Oh, God.
She's like, no, I created this shit. Like, all of this, this is my work.
I mean, does she get it from her mama? Is like Madame Delamere, like, who is referenced in this episode, like, why she is the way she is?
I have not read the other books, but my understanding is, yes, that is absolutely Madame Delamere is why she is the way she is. But I love how she's like, mother, of course she would help you find me. Oh, but she also sent me these pretty clothes. been feeling kind of shabby.
Yeah, I mean, she's in a fucking, like, war camp suit. She's like, let me get out of this and get in these new threads. You know what I mean? Instantly in the new thread.
And she, like, instantly has more confidence in them. She's like, feeling cute. Gonna go look for the secret lab now.
Oh, my gosh. It's wild. many different looks. Many different looks for Mrs. Coulter. Oh, man. So, I mean, this is a good time. Like, she had some thoughts. She had some allies. She had one of the chief allies we talked about was Roke. Maybe we go and look at the Amber Spyglass and talk about the Gallivespians.
Love them.
So, the Gallivespians, Lord Roke and Salamakia, are Gallivespians from a world where humans oppress and attempt to exterminate the smaller people at the behest of the authority. Similarly to how the Magisterium began to exterminate the witches in season 2, their lives are much shorter than humans, living only weeks or months. They're equipped with stingers that can incapacitate or kill a human. In the book, they do not have wings, but instead fly on the back of fireflies, which is pretty freaking awesome.
And this is a cool fact that I just discovered. Their bond with their fireflies is kind of like Aang's bond with Appa.
Wow.
Like, you cultivate this relationship with a firefly from, like, childhood, and they're, like, forever bonded to you.
Why didn't we get fireflies? I guess it's the same reason why we didn't get more direwolves. I guess that's what's happening.
Yeah, also, like, they eliminated my favorite Gallivespian. Anyway, I corrected you. I interrupted you. Sorry about that.
So because of their small size, Asriel uses the Gallivespians as spies in the conflict, and Lyra and Will travel with two Gallivespians, Salamakia and Taelis, who start out interested in the knife, but stay with them out of devotion. Most notable about the inclusion of the Gallivespians is that they are navigating this conflict with bravery that equals the witches, angels, and even the armored bears. Yet they are small in size, demonstrating once again that conviction and intention are significant strengths in the face of challenges. I also particularly love that even though he wasn't the one who was driving the intention craft, speaking about intention, he was able to travel within the intention craft with Mrs. Coulter, even though he wasn't, like, with a demon and with her intention. He just got in. So his intention was strong enough to actually travel in the intention craft to the same location. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I really, I started the book really not liking the Gallivespians because they're kind of rude. Like, they're very little people, but they have very big egos, and they're kind of rude. They're constantly, like, lecturing Will and Lyra, and you see that with Salamakia, like, basically is like, you lied to me, and they're like, who are you even? Like, we don't owe you anything. Like, Will says, we're the ones in charge here. And that's kind of how the relationship starts in the book, but like every other character that comes across Will and Lyra, they eventually see just like how incredible these two young people are. And there's real love and devotion between Tialis, who got written out for the show, and Salmakia. But I do think the show does a good job of kind of replacing that devotion with like just the courageousness of Roke. I mean, mm-hmm. like I said earlier, Roke could have just bounced. Like, mm-hmm. what, like, why mm-hmm. does he need to help Mrs. Coulter? He could leave.
He'd be like, I'm out. I'm done. I'm going back to Azrael. This is crazy. Yeah, for sure. So what about the theme? You want to talk about the theme of the episode?
Yeah. So I had kind of been toying with, just so our listeners like know, like part of our process is we don't always do themes at the end of episodes because sometimes it just like it doesn't feel like there's a theme or like it would feel kind of forced. But with mm-hmm. these two episodes made me want to talk about themes because it's so strong. Like there's clearly a through line between the two episodes and those are reluctance and doubt. Mm-hmm. So throughout both episodes, Lyra and Will are experiencing reluctance and doubt about the path that they have to take next. It's the source of their conflict. At the beginning of episode 3, Will's reluctance stems from his devotion to Lyra, which is in conflict, to his desire to fulfill his father's last wishes. It also stems from the guilt he feels about abandoning his mother, which is why he broke the knife. In Lyra's conversation with Yurik, she talks about, you know, doubt is something that only good people experience, as we talked about earlier. And while doubt is frequently viewed as a negative emotion, it is a feeling that allows us to consider our actions carefully. Lyra uses her parents as an example. Those who don't doubt, their certainty that they know best has led them down terrible paths, harmful paths, painful paths. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Coulter's devotion to the authority is the reason she created the device that separates children from their demons, the very technology that the Magisterium is going to use to kill Lyra. Mm. We have never seen Mrs. Coulter in much doubt until now. Even when other people were questioning the General Operation Board's methods, she was like, sometimes you got to kill a few kids, get things mm-hmm. done. But you know, now she's starting to reconsider the things that she did in the past because now, you know, the Azrael took away the authority from her. Azrael also suppresses his doubt. Even when Stelmaria presses him, he doesn't allow himself to consider that he might be wrong about Lyra. Mm. His single-minded approach is undermining his entire plan. Lyra is the key.
Yes.
How many people have got to tell him this?
Yeah.
And it's also creating distrust amongst his counselors. While Lyra appears determined in her, you know, mission to go to the land of the dead, Pan is articulating his doubt all throughout the journey. And as you mentioned, they're the same person, mm-hmm. which means that Lyra's suppressing part of herself when she ignores him. But their doubt is a credit to both Lyra and Will. It's a feeling that keeps their intentions pure and helps them consider the harm that they may cause in the world.
Yep, I agree. No, I agree. And you can feel that she's doubting it. I think she's doubting it the whole time. She knows she does know she needs to go for whatever reason, whatever's calling her. But I don't think that she is. They kind of like go back and forth trying to figure out a workaround to, and the guy's just like, nah, you're not going to be able to work around this. Like he can't come, you know? And, so yeah, it's a big moment. And I like the reluctance and doubt. And I also like that it's actually viewed as like the way Yurik frames it as a strength. You know what I mean? It's really, really cool. So.
Yeah. And this whole thing is about like, what does it mean to question things? Right. And doubt is when we question ourselves. We take a moment and say, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. This isn't comfortable. Why am I doing this again? Is this the right thing to do? I think it's like a really important thing for us to remember as people, which is just yeah. like that nagging feeling of like, this is not, maybe I shouldn't do this. Is important to even stopping and just considering, should you do it? Even if you decide to go forward with it in the end, which is what Lyra did.
It's such a part of humility, I think, too, right? It's like we talk about Azrael, of his ego driving it, and people worried about him wanting to put himself on the throne. But that moment of pausing just to like consider whether or not your course of action is the correct one really does speak to having humility and being able to be self-reflective and being able to say, you know what I mean? So I think like there's something that they're saying here in this. I'm laughing because my fiance made a joke that it felt like don't be a menace while drinking your juice, that there were a lot of things that like the person who pops out and says message all the time. But there are a lot of messages, right? Like it's really, yeah, really, really true.
Yeah, I mean, know? I think that she is making a really important point, which is just that you and I have talked at length on this show about how the show does not underline important things. And yeah. Then I think this season they were like, well, this is it. So we got to go hard.
Yeah, exactly. Mad heavy handed.
Yeah. You know so I mean? There, like, yeah, there's definitely true. Moments of like, you're like, oh, I should be leaning in and paying attention. This is a major theme.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. It works for me because I have been so curious about like what the message behind this work is. I think a lot of people read these books one back to back. That has not been my experience. I read the Golden Compass, and then I, like 6 months later, I started The Ember Spyglass. I didn't finish it right away. The Subtle Knife. Mm-hmm. And then like there was at least a 2-year gap between me finishing The Subtle Knife and then starting the Ember Spyglass. And so these themes are kind of unraveling slowly for me. And so I don't mind the heavy handedness because I'm like, can I just get some answers?
Yeah.
But yes, I think her point is very well taken. You're definitely like message sometimes.
Oh, man, it's hilarious. Man, well, that will do it for us. And really, really happy to have you all. Glad that we're in this season, covering the show, closing it out. And please feel free to reach out to us at our socials, KinFolklorePod on Instagram and on Twitter. Hit us up at kinfolklore@gmail.com. And leave all the reviews with all of the things. We appreciate you very much. And we'll see you next week.
So much. Thank you, everyone. Bye.